Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we are live on Blog Talk Radio for your favorite NFL and Falcons show. Of course, we are the Falcons Zone. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York, and join me once again, we have the triple threat of the coach, Haywood Hill, and the King, A.T. Alien, and our presidential candidate, Reggie Walker. How are we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy.
Doing great, Jeremy.
Yeah, see, Reggie, you don't think I don't snoop on your Facebook as well. I snoop everybody's Facebook. You guys should know that.
Then hopefully I'll win. You just put me out there.
Right. You know, you should have said something. I early voted like over a week ago. So, unfortunately, I did not write you in at that point.
Yeah, I got a lot of those today. Got a lot of those responses. It's okay. I'll be ready for the runoff.
Hey, you know, if you were on a particular side, there's a good chance there may be a vacancy. But we're not a political show, so we're not going to get into that. I promised everybody I would stay out of politics, at least for today. But happy Tuesday. And for everybody who is as confused as Reggie and Coach were initially when I said, hey, we're going to do it on Tuesday, actually Georgia State, which we also cover here, has a game in the Georgia Dome on Thursday. So just to avoid confusion and just to, you know, I don't know that their Wi-Fi is strong enough to carry the show. It probably is. But we decided to move the game, the show here to Tuesday. So without further ado, let's get right into Falcons Zone because, like I said, I want to get into Falcons Zone first just for the simple fact that sometimes I feel like it gets cheated. We have to cut part out of that because of a time constraint. So we're just going to jump into it. So if I told you guys that one quarterback in that game this past weekend, of course we're talking about Green Bay and Atlanta, went 28 for 38, 246 yards, and four touchdowns. Which quarterback is that?
That would be Aaron Rodgers. Correct. I would say the same.
Yep, that is Aaron Rodgers because Matt Ryan actually got the help from Devontae Freeman on the other one. But, you know, Coach, you missed a heck of a game as far as in person, but I'm sure you've seen a lot like it. Me and Reggie were there live. My mom was there. Reggie's amazing lady friend was there as well. Shout out to her because you just, you know, as she learned, sometimes you can't take people like me and Reggie places. We're just going to walk.
She's used to it.
Yeah, that's something my wife had to get used to is I know everybody, and if I don't know you, it will take about 30 seconds, and I will. But, no, with this game going on, Matt Ryan still had – he was 28 for 35, actually three less throws, 288 and three touchdowns. And I think you can ask anybody, those are still pretty good numbers.
Yeah, especially when you're getting help from the run game. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was the run game for those guys. So, it probably would have fared about the same had he actually had a running back.
Yeah, I think he did a real good job in the football game. There are a couple of things that I'll add to this game as far as Atlanta was concerned. the good, the bad, and the ugly. First, the good was that we were very competitive in the game, as the score reflected. Great for play calling, as well offensively and defensively. The bad, we did not win it. Naturally, we had an opportunity at the end to try to get in field goal range and just missed that fourth and three to possibly give ourselves the opportunity to do so. But the ugly is the fact that we have a plethora of injuries in Green Bay right now. And that's going to be one of the interesting parts of it over the next couple of weeks. As players begin to get healthy, you know, will Green Bay be able to sustain the competitiveness? And also, will they be able to win, you know, two games over the next 3 weeks so that when those players come back, they're still within the hunt for playoff seeding purposes?
Oh, absolutely. And in no way do I know me and Reggie agree that those that is an excuse you're saying about the injuries, because I mean, Atlanta has theirs as well, and it's something you talk about a lot, Coach. There's a difference in spraining your ankle in Miami, doing it in Nashville, and doing it in Green Bay. You're going to get three completely different rehab timetables because of the weather and because of all kinds of other factors.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there in a cold weather city like Green Bay, the climate is controlled with inside of the training facility. And also the indoor facility, they do have the luxury of having an indoor facility, an outdoor turf and natural grass, so they can play according to the conditions. But part of the issue is that when players get hurt, there's something as and that there's a level of being simple in an injury, or some of the simplicities in thumbs and hamstrings and things that are soft tissue injuries tend to elongate themselves in the healing process, because of the climate and the nature of just the area itself, whether they're going, in this case, we came to Atlanta and played in the dome, so therefore the practice was done inside. However, just your day-to-day life in Green Bay can be harsh with the different climates change, and that plays a role in it as well. So just hopefully getting those guys back in the next 3 weeks. And I think we have 8 to 10 guys down now off the roster. If we can get those guys back, then most definitely – and win two games over the next 3 weeks, I think you'll see most definitely see a different Green Bay team, because not only will they have had the rest, but they'll come back fresh, you know, off of those injuries and hungry to play.
Yeah, the weird thing about Green Bay to me is that they actually sent Niles Davis out the door earlier today, I believe. The weird thing is it makes it look like that trade was a bust, that it's going to cost them that pick. Do you know any more about that?
No, it's still early right now, and I'm sure other discussions are going in, but the trade, trust me, the trade goes in with something else that has something that's coming behind it. So I don't know quite on that next level, from the executive level, what the organization might be looking at, but trust me, there are some things that are behind the scenes that are developing the next 2 days that will come public.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, Niall Davis actually signed with the Jets, and then it looks like he just got cut so they could sign C.J. Spiller. So, you know, I guess Niall Davis, good luck to him. Maybe throw a dart and see which team you're going to be at next. He's a good runner. I don't understand why he's bouncing back and forth. But back to the Falcons win, and we'll hit on this a little later when we talk about our MVP talk to this point. But Matt Ryan had another hellaciously great game. It was almost foolproof, and as you said earlier, Coach, when we were talking before the show, Matt Ryan's last drive, that what turned into the game-winning drive was, I mean, that's what you want out of a great quarterback. Good quarterbacks usually don't do those.
Well, that's the one thing, too, that, you know, has become probably the staple, and I was talking to another guy about it. That is actually, in a lot of people's eyes, something that he will be known for. He's one of the best guys that you give him 2 minutes, minute and a half, you know, he's got a chance. He's going to give you a chance. And I think that, you know, the fact that he goes out there, and it's almost like you're starting to expect it now, right? If Matt Ryan's got 2 minutes, whatever he needs, he's going to get. Now, what perplexes me as a fan is what happens when in the three and outs, you know, earlier in the game, when if right. you can march down the field in such ease, you should be able to do that every time, you know. And so that's I'm always perplexed by that.
Well, a lot of it, Reggie, has to do, too, with play selection and calling in the down and the distance and where they are on the field. So a lot of times it's dictated by what the defense is showing him, and he's always looking to take the profit in that last play. Because we have so much respect for Julio Jones as a player, the defense dictated what could be done down there. Now, normally you don't see a zone coverage inside the red zone. You normally would just man up and just play it across the board. However, you know, Julio, even injured, is still a threat. It's like almost like an injured lineman. You still wouldn't walk up on it. So with that, we still had to honor defensively the ability of Julio being able to make a play, and a cover two was called down there as I look at the play. And at that point, they got the matchup they wanted with Sanu and the linebacker. Now, where the linebacker went wrong in his play was that he didn't sink deep enough. And normally linebackers are not accustomed to playing a mid-third, if you would, middle of the field, all the way back to the back of the end zone. It's something that's normally practiced. So at that point, he felt that maybe the pressure had gotten there and he was at a point where he was in his natural position. If you notice, he stopped on the play and jumped it around the goal line, which would be natural for him in a man coverage to catch the crossing route. However, you know, again, we had to honor on both sides the receivers that were out on the edges, and we played a cover two to kind of corral those guys to make sure that they were not the guys getting the ball and beat us with someone else. And they found the matchup inside with the slot. With Sanu, it was a great throw by Matt Ryan. I mean, he, you know, if it wasn't a Sanu, if it had been anybody else, that ball would have went out the end zone. But because you have, you know, Sanu, and he's a big body, it made it a lot easier for him to hit him as a target right there and only put him in play for him.
Well, it's interesting you said that, because one of the things I looked at Matt's press conference, and he mentioned that is actually a common practice when they're practicing their routes. He realizes that he's got two receivers that are 6'4 or 6'3 plus, and they're leapers. So it's actually commonplace for him to think, if I'm going to one of those two, I can put it up there and they'll go get it in most cases, or at least they'll have an opportunity to go get it. But even back to the doubling of Julio, you know, you got to figure at some point these teams are going to learn, because I as I went back and went through the replay, even on the touchdown run by Devontae Freeman, they literally had two guys out on Julio on the right side, left side of the line. And that was kind of the commonplace when they got down in that area. So it actually was, they did go man up and explicitly double team Julio. But at some point, teams are going to have to learn. And I hope they don't, right? Because with guys like Taylor Gabriel and Hooper, I mean, Sanu, keep doing it. At some point, you're going to have to single cover him, and he's going to go get 300 on you. So it's almost like that's what I love about this offense now. It's becoming a pick-your-poison offense, especially with the dual nature of the backs. I think, you know, again, offensively, we're fine. Defensively, that last play, okay. But and you and I talked about this, Coach, earlier. There's a ton of problems on this defense. And I posed the question to you then in private, and I'll pose it to you again on here, you know, is it, because it's a question, your common question asked, is it that the talent is that bad, or is it that they're just young and they haven't learned to play Quinn's system yet?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think that they're young. I think they're still trying to fill their roles and positions with inside this defense. But most importantly, it's trust. I think the biggest issue that the Atlanta defense has right now in their secondary is trust. And if you notice, you saw a better game out of the front line as they pushed forward and they made plays and they pushed, you know, they made their presence to be known. So I think as a unit, they have to come together and they just have to trust one another. The secondary had some different looks in it with Poole and some other people that were in there due to injuries or whatnot. And now it's a trust factor. So once they get on the same page and are willing to trust each other and what they're doing. And again, if you want to talk about zone defenses, Green Bay played it perfectly. They showed you how to play zone. Atlanta should have taken notes from that.
And I saw a lot of busted plays in Atlanta's defense. But I think for them, it's more so an issue of just trust. Once they're comfortable and confident in what they're doing, and I think off it on one side and truth on the other side, you know, getting those guys to relax, then those plays are made with ease. So it's just that I think they just got to trust one another. You know, in a secondary is just like a receiving corps with a quarterback. It takes time to develop, but then the biggest piece of it is trust. How well do I trust you as my teammate?
Yeah, and you guys talk about the front line. You know, actually, Courtney Upshaw had a pretty good showing, and even though he didn't have a sack, I think he had a lot to do with Vic Beasley getting one, Adrian Claiborne introduced himself to Aaron Rodgers twice in the backfield. You know, suddenly the pass rush is there, and it just seems like they're getting the right veteran to be on one side, and it causes you to have to pay attention to everybody now and not just the main rusher.
Yeah, they definitely Adrian Claiborne was one of those guys that I was happy that we kept in the offseason. First-round draft pick by Tampa Bay some years ago. Didn't quite work out there. You know, change of scenery came in. And I was especially pleased because as I'm watching from the sideline, when Green Bay had gone down and scored the second time, he came over to the sideline, slammed his helmet down, grabbed all the defensive linemen and proceeded to start ripping them to shreds and then walked away. So much so that Freeney had to come over and kind of calm him down. So that's what you like to see, right? And right after that, you know, the guy starts going nuts internally. But I don't know. It's the pass rush is getting there. I think with the linebackers, Jones and Campbell are a little young, and so they gamble a little bit more often than they probably should. But I think that's you. The same with Neil. Neil gambles a lot, and he doesn't wrap up. He wants to shoulder tackle a lot of times, and he wants to lay the boom. But he doesn't really, you know, wrap up and play sound technique. But I think, again, that's youth. I'm concerned about, you know, when that trust happens because they're going to need it. They're going to need it as they get further down into the remainder of the season.
Yeah, sure, they definitely are. And you know, there's a couple guys that because of injuries and because I actually think that they're starting to shake up, you know, some of the lineups they're putting out there. You know, C.J. Goodwin had a pretty good game. He's usually a special teamer. They were able to – he usually plays behind Alford, I believe, in the depth chart. He was able to get a good bit of
right.
snaps. He actually had that pass breakup there at the end that actually iced the game.
Right.
And I actually did
right.
a little bit of research on him. He spent 2 years – I think he was undrafted – he spent 2 years on the Pittsburgh practice squad. Atlanta signed him, and then they've recently moved him up. He's played the last few games on the main roster. And, I mean, to me, he earned his spot.
Oh, absolutely. And Collins is coming back. That's their project guy. That's the guy that everybody's waiting to kind of see them let loose on. So yeah, I think it'll come together. I think the one thing I do like about the makeup of the team is that they're going into the bench now. You know, during the Mike Smith era, you kind of expected a certain amount of guys to play. And I'll give you a prime example of one guy, Nate Stupar, who we had and I think was a heck of a linebacker. He's down there making all kinds of noise with New Orleans right now. And it was just because he just didn't get the opportunity to show his skills. And maybe your other guy, Mr. Tyler Starr, maybe that was the same case with him, right? He just didn't get the opportunity to develop. So I like the fact that we're developing that next man up, not only in talk, but in practice. You know, I don't think there's very many guys that aren't at some point rotated into the game.
And that's smart football. When you're looking at a coaching staff and when you're looking at a roster, you don't want to find yourself, especially with Atlanta's schedule, trying to put guys in position to play when, you know, 95% of your games, are conference and or divisional games. And on the backside of the schedule where the NFL has made it down to the wire with a lot of the divisional opponents playing one another in the last probably 4 weeks, 5 weeks of the season, it's huge to get those guys out there and let them know that they're part of this. They're not special team players. They're not just
out here on the roster to earn a check to run down for one play and then be put in the game upon injury. And that's how you're building the continuity. So when you said that you were concerned earlier, that concern comes from basically Quinn making his Kool-Aid, as I like to call it. He's adding sugar. He's adding sugar. And he's stirring as he goes so that he gets the right balance in it. So that way when they get to the backside of the season, he's not concerned about how this player is going to perform under the pressure of being in for 10, 12, 15 snaps or even a whole entire game if need be.
Right. And the other thing to that, too, I'll add real quickly, is that this speaks testament to Quinn's ability to pick players. And I'll go to Teron Ward, who they went and signed on the practice squad. The guy came in and made some huge plays, played big. And as a result of his play, which he was doing some of the same in during the preseason before they cut him or put him on the practice squad, I should say. Now with Coleman being injured with a hamstring, you don't want to rush him back. And there's actually probably a likelihood that we don't see Coleman anymore until after the bye. But now they have the cushion and the ability to do that now because guys like Teron Ward are stepping up.
Right, absolutely. And, I didn't just do a little bit of research on C.J. Goodwin just because he made the pass breakup. I was actually getting some behind-the-scenes analysis the entire game as his parents happened to be sitting right next to me and my mom up in the stands. So shout out to them because I know they're listening tonight, and hopefully you high-five C.J. for all the play he did.
I mean, absolutely. Like you said, he had that game-winning pass breakup. But you know what? Even on the flip side, one thing I've got to say is, Aaron Rodgers is by far one of the best to ever do it. I mean, to come into that game, you always have to keep an eye on him. And on top of that, I mean, the guy had three of his four receivers were guys that no one could even call their names out if it wasn't on the back of their jerseys. I mean, that to me is that's just Tom Brady-esque, right? I mean, what a guy, man. What a player he is, man. He's scary, and to watch him march down the field with 27 seconds, I think it was, before the half, and kick a field goal is like, really? and I was biting my nails, I promise you, that last minute and a half or last minute of the game, because you just never knew what he was going to pull out of his bag of tricks.
Yeah,
oh,
Aaron
sure.
Like
very I was...
smart. I'm sorry, Jeremy. Aaron is a very smart football player, and one of the things when you're looking at the aptitude of a player is where he caught Atlanta in a mental breakdown with the linebacker number 50. I can't get his name, but I do remember the 12th man called. And what Aaron did was he looked over and saw that the opponent was beginning to walk. And it's something that we always preach and practice: never walk on the field. Everything, when you're on the field, everything is moving with a sense of urgency. And that right there literally gave us the opportunity to stay in the game, because if that play is not – if he doesn't quick snap that ball and get it off to Janice it was Jordy Nelson at that time, Jordy Nelson who makes the play, but then we don't actually get the first down. If you go back and look at it, Nelson gets the first down, but then he steps backward and the tackle is made. And at that point – he wasn't contacted until the tackle. So at that point, we're out, and we don't get the opportunity to get the score. So, again, him being very smart of it, just being aware of his environment, he has a great awareness when he's on the field. Unlike any quarterback I've ever seen, he is just so aware of where everyone is and what's taking place and all the movable parts that was really the play that gave us an opportunity to stay in the game. We don't make that play or get that call, we lose it at that point.
Yeah, that would be Mr. $56 million Brooks Reed that was trotting off the field, who had to shut down his Twitter because of the backlash he received from the fan base there. Wow. Shortly after the game. So, yeah, that was Brooks Reed.
Well, as far as Aaron Rodgers, let me be the first to apologize that as much as I dog him and I halfway ripped him a new one a couple weeks ago, I apologize, Aaron, because I know you're listening right now. Shout out to you and Olivia. I hope you guys are enjoying your day off. But, you know, maybe your best days aren't behind you because you came out this week and proved, you know, kind of to a point what Tom Brady does, what only a couple other quarterbacks in league history have done. Like you said, Reggie, besides Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, some people know, but Jeff Janis, Davis, Allison, Ripkowski, I mean, who in the world are these guys? So let me just formally apologize to Aaron Rodgers that, at least for this week, I won't dog you again because you had a spectacular performance. It's one that only great quarterbacks make, just like Matt Ryan did. That's what made this matchup so great, was two exceptional quarterbacks of their generation. And then also, I'm going to kind of backhanded compliment it and say, you're welcome, Green Bay and Green Bay fans, because I woke up the sleeping giant and Aaron Rodgers looks like he's back. I'll take total credit
for
that.
He was starting to show some signs of being back the game before, which is why I was a little concerned, because he didn't quite look as in the weeds as he had in some of the previous games. But, again, it's a testament. You know, the great guys are going to always figure it out and reverse course. I think Matt Ryan has finally figured that out himself, which is, hey, you know, we drop a couple of tough ones. One, we should, you know, two, we should have absolutely won. One was out of our control, but the second game was. But to come back and rally against a good, you know, Green Bay team, injured or not, you know, speaks testaments about where he is mentally with his game right now. So I'm really looking forward to Thursday's matchup. I want to see where they come back from such a short week. And I know we're going to probably jump into that a little bit, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if they can keep the momentum going. They're in desperate need of a bye week, but they got two tough games in Tampa and Philadelphia, two away games before they go to a bye. So, this is where the brotherhood and the grit and all of those things that Quinn has been preaching, this is where it's going to all come to fruition now.
Absolutely. And before we move on to preview that matchup on Thursday Night Football with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Tampa, nonetheless, to kind of bring this whole game full circle, shout out to great Packers passionate fan Ashley and her parents who met up with me and Reggie at the ATL Falcoholics tailgate because of Reggie's headwear. And I'll post that picture probably at the end of the show. But she just stopped.
Yeah, I ended
talking.
Up
she really likes your hat, and we got talking. Hopefully she's listening tonight. She said she might call in. If she does, then we'll try to get her on. But if not, Ashley, it was great meeting you. It was good talking to you. And, you know, like we always say, we love meeting fans. So if you see us somewhere, stop and chat for a minute.
Yeah, I actually ended up taking, and there was a count, I ended up taking about 65 or 66 photos that day, just with various Packers fans. And those were just the people that kind of stopped and asked me if I would take a picture because of the hat. So thanks to the greater head community up in Chicago. For getting that headgear down to me in time enough for the game.
Oh, absolutely, because it actually allowed me to catch up to you, and I think me and you were within about 10 seconds of walking in Gate B at the same time. It's just you were on one side, I was on the other.
Yeah, I was the only one in the house with it, so it was a blast. Great game, great game.
For some reason, you didn't make the Jumbotron, so hopefully you were on the TV broadcast.
Yeah, I don't know. I was fast-forwarding through a lot of it, so I wasn't sure. But I'm pretty sure I'm all over Facebook somewhere.
If not, you will be in probably 32 minutes or so.
Right.
But like we said, let's go ahead and preview the matchup against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Thursday Night Football. The thing to me that's going to make this game a lot closer than I typically would say it was is because it's on short rest and it's a division game. And those two things usually bring out the best on Thursdays. But, you know, maybe next week we'll debate about Thursday Night Football. I personally am against it for a lot of reasons. But just the quick preview for me is I still think Atlanta's going to win the game. We'll get into our picks in a second. But Atlanta's still going to win the game, but it's going to be a lot closer than it probably should be.
Yeah, again, it's a division game. Jameis Winston is just one of those guys that Atlanta has yet to be able to beat. He's undefeated against Atlanta, going back to last year. So you know, for whatever reason, he's an enigma right now. But I think they'll get a different team than they got game one. Jaquizz Rodgers was their guy in the backfield this last game against the Raiders, and he's out this week. They actually had to grab a guy off of the street to start, which, you know, should say something, but we'll see. I guess my solace is that, you know, they did get into an extended overtime game against the Raiders. And so hopefully they're just as fatigued. I guess the big difference being they've just got to get up out of their beds and come to the game, not necessarily travel down from home. So I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be, you know, the 56-14 score it was some years ago. But I think Atlanta pulls it out.
All right, Coach.
Yeah, I agree. I think Atlanta roster-wise has a better football team on paper right now and in depth. One of the things that I'll say as it pertains to Atlanta is that normally the short week can work to your advantage because you don't have a lot of time. You have to go right back in and play, and so your mind is still – they're coming off a great win against Green Bay. And I think that's going to carry for them. I think one of the things that Winston – in a deficiency that he has, that he tends to be a little impatient at times. I think that's going to hurt him in the game. He tends to force plays when they're not there. So, again, I think that Atlanta overall should win this game based on what they have on their roster right now currently. And the issue, again, with Tampa Bay and the running back, just don't know quite how that's going to paint itself out. If Atlanta stuffs and stops the run early, then it's going to be a long day for Tampa.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know that about Jameis Winston, that he is 3-0 against Atlanta. But it's a good time to change that. It's time to break out those crazy-looking – I mean, they almost look like dental instruments. But whatever it takes to crack those crab legs and send Jameis home with a loss, I'm all for it.
Yeah, one of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers weren't happy with my Twitter pick to them yesterday. So,
yeah, I can see that. It's and if you haven't seen it, you know, just he's Reggie Walker on Facebook, and if not, I'll grab it off there and throw it up on the website or one of our pages where you can see it too. I'll throw both those pictures up. But to recap the division real quickly before we bring up the ultimate question and then go into some NFL stuff. The Bucs did fall to the Raiders in that crazy overtime game, and we'll talk a little bit about it in a minute. The Saints defeated Seattle, and anytime we'll also talk more about it, but anytime you can give Seattle a defeat, I am pretty happy. And then the Panthers were able to rebound off their skid. They won 30-20 over the Cardinals, but the biggest thing is they sacked Carson Palmer 8 times.
Yeah, they're starting to pick it up defensively and even offensively in this game against a good what I thought to be a tough Arizona defense. And the Saints are starting to find some life here, which, again, is another reason why I think Atlanta will pull this game out, because if they can win this, then this all but puts them in the driver's seat from a division perspective. It'll be theirs to lose at that point. So, yeah, those two teams are starting to figure it out. You could start to see that look in their eyes, especially with the Saints. This is a super, super important game here.
And then, let's see, now we bring up the ultimate Falcons question, or at least the one I'm posing this week. We should make it a poll question or something. But, you know, how far exactly do you think this team can actually go based off the way they have played here recently? Coach, we'll start with you.
We might have lost Coach.
Coach?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, guys.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. There was a gap in there.
I do agree that you know, when you look at where teams are and where the season is, I'm looking at the totality of the NFL right now as a whole. And right now, all games are just really, really tough. I think that going back and, you know, we're talking about the Panthers, we're talking about Arizona. It's the time in which injuries happen, too. You know, they lose a couple of players for a couple of weeks now, from my understanding, that they now hit the IR list. And so now it's where teams are. How healthy can you be on this backstretch? The Panthers pulled out, you know, a nice win, a lot of sacks in this game, but then at what cost? What are the little nuances in their injury report as well? So it's going to be, you know, when I look at all of these games as we move into the second half of the season, and most definitely in the last 4 weeks of the season, I'm guess the thing that I'm finding interesting is who can stay healthy, but more importantly, who has that roster that they're comfortable with and they have enough playing time on the field. They've clocked enough of that live time on the field that's going to get teams through all of this. I'm just going to be real interested to see. And I told you guys earlier, I thought it was about nine teams. I can peg nine teams right now that are in the hunt down to the wire for the Super Bowl. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if those teams that I predicted over the last in that 2 year window will be there, and we'll see what happens with them.
Wow, nine. That's probably three or so more than I got pegged right now. But, you know, overall, how far can this Falcons team go? We were talking a little before the show about it. You know, exactly how far do you think they could go on the run they're on right now?
Well, I personally feel that the Falcons, at minimum, would be a second round playoff team. At the minimum, they'll end up in, you know, second round if a loss is going to come there. But in reality, Atlanta, I predict that Atlanta, if they stay the course, continue to find their trust on defense, continue to allow the receivers and that receiving core to develop in the offense. The offensive line shores itself up a little bit better with one or two more players that they can give relief to, and Matthews and some others. I really feel that Atlanta can find themselves in the conference championship, staying healthy. And I'm going to go out on a limb to say this, with or without a Julio Jones. I will go as far as to say that. I think Julio is such a mature player at this point that he realizes that it's okay. I think he is the real true secret ingredient to their offense. As long as he has Matt Ryan's confidence that it's okay, I don't get as many balls thrown my way, as long as we win, then I think the sky's the limit for a man.
Even though I have a feeling what he's going to say, Reggie, what do you think?
Actually, I'm more in line with coaches as well. I think it comes down to injuries. I think it comes down to maintaining this sense of brotherhood that the team seems to have right now. I think that if they stay as they are now, I think minimum second round of playoffs. I'm not ready to say Super Bowl or even that, even though I'm a fan. I'm a realist. I know that defense wins championships, and there are some very good defenses out there. There are some very good offenses out there, and you can match up with a team that has a half decent offense and a great defense, and there it is, right? But I think as they are now, they definitely get through, you know, that first round. If not a bye in the first round, definitely they can win that wild card game, and you know, conference championship is doable. I think it's definitely doable.
Yep, I definitely have to agree with you guys that I think we're looking at least a conference championship as far as them making it. I do believe, I mean, conference championships are really based on matchups as far as who wins, same way the Super Bowl is. So do I think they could make a conference championship? Absolutely. Can they win it based off the right matchup? Absolutely. And then the same thing with the Super Bowl. But I definitely see them, like you guys said, second round into the conference championship, and then, you know, all bets are off there. May the best team win. So, you know, it'd be really great to see the Falcons go on a big run because the city of Atlanta could use it.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. Even on the AFC side, when I look at teams on this side and we talk matchups, there's not really a team on the offense on the NFC side that I think scares me or that I think Atlanta can't play with and can't beat. I think a team like the Patriots, just because of where we are on defense, I think that's a tough Super Bowl. that would be a tough one for us. I think that would be a tough one.
You don't think the Falcons would have issues with Seattle or Dallas?
Who now?
Seattle or Dallas?
Difficulty. Say that one more time, Jeremy.
I was saying, are you saying that the Falcons would not have issues with Seattle or Dallas?
I don't think so. I mean, based on what I saw in Seattle and how they played them in Seattle, no, I don't think so. Dallas, again, you know, I think that guy's playing lights out because nobody has any film on him, right?
Right.
But you know, Atlanta's deficiency isn't necessarily stopping the run. Their deficiency is stopping the pass right now.
Right.
And short of maybe Dez Bryant, I don't think they have that much trouble with Dallas.
Okay. I was looking at the list of division leaders right now, and, you know, I think the Falcons can beat the Vikings. I really think they can beat Seattle, and them and Dallas would be very fun to watch. So I just figured I'd bring that up because I was looking at the division leaders. Of course, the AFC division leaders right now, the Steelers, the Texans, the surging Raiders, because they own the tiebreaker, I believe, going into this week, and, of course, the odds-on favorite, New England Patriots.
Right.
But, yeah, let's move into some NFL stuff. We'll start with our picks because I want to make sure to get these in. We had another spectacular week, and by we, I mean Reggie, who went 3-1. He is 18-14 overall. Coach went 2-2. And see, I counted the tie because we were a part of the tie as a loss, because if it's not a win, it's a loss. It's kind of, I didn't want to get complicated with our overall thing. So, you know, technically, Reggie, you were 3-0-1, and technically, Coach, you were 2-1-1, but it just got complicated. But Coach is 2-2. He's now 14-18 and at a respectable 12-20, only because it's my show. I went 1-3 last week, but I think we're going to turn it around. We got some fun matchups, and, you know, without further ado, let's get into them. Obviously, I believe we all have Atlanta versus Tampa Bay, correct?
That's correct.
And there we go. Sound guys.
It's funny because it's true.
And then moving on, I just spoke of it. The Denver Broncos will be in Oakland. Reggie, who do you have?
I'm going to take Oakland.
All right. Coach?
I have Oakland as well. That was that two-year planned out team that I spoke about, and Carr's playing very well right now. I think they have enough to beat Denver.
It's funny because it's true.
Yep, I have Oakland as well. And not only do I give you the great high five and pat on the back, Coach, for calling the Raiders that two-year out team a couple years ago, but I actually like that beforehand you mentioned that the Philadelphia Eagles could be that very team in a couple years, because I actually like what the Eagles are doing right now. Buffalo at Seattle. Who do you have, Coach?
You know what? This is a toss-up game for me, believe it or not. Buffalo, it depends on what Buffalo team shows up. But because they're going to Seattle to play this game, I have to give Seattle the edge on this, so I have to go with Seattle.
Okay, and let me just throw this information out. Does it change your vote if I tell you that Buffalo just unretired and re-signed Percy Harvin?
No.
All right, Reggie, who do you have?
Yeah, I'm like, Coach, that was a this is a tough one for me. I'm gonna pick the upset though. I'm gonna go Buffalo.
Okay. Well, we're guaranteed not to have another homer sweep. Yeah, I'm torn by this. This is why I put this game up here. Not really for the importance, even though there is some, because Buffalo's on the outside looking in right now because getting embarrassed by Tom Brady, which is you just don't poke that bear. It's not worth it. But then Seattle had their skid. They've kind of started to put it back together, but they still are not quite the same Seattle that won a Super Bowl and then almost won another. I think I'm going to go with you, Reggie. I think I'm going to go Buffalo just because, you know, the kinds of things that Buffalo fans throw onto the field when they lose, that we can only imagine what's going to hit the field if they win.
Right. I just saw footage of that today.
Yeah, that game is being played in Seattle, correct?
It is.
Or Buffalo.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's in Seattle.
Okay. I mean, I really like where Buffalo is going. I really like what Coach Ryan is doing with them. I don't know quite yet if they have enough. I don't know quite
right.
yet if they have enough. And that's the only reason why I said because it's so tough to play in Seattle. One of the interesting things that why it was so tough for me is how the officiating is going to work now. Now that they have they're on the radar, I'm sorry, so to speak, as an organization with the officiating, I think that's what's going to play the difference in this game. But I don't quite know if Buffalo just has enough yet on their roster, and if an injury here and there takes place, if they have enough to beat it. But this was really, really tough for me. I was leaning heavily possibly with Buffalo, but just because of the environment. If this is a Buffalo, I go with Buffalo, hands down.
Oh, you don't have to send your picks to us. I mean, we're kind of 50-50 on this anyway. That's why it was such a crazy matchup. That's why I wanted to include it because – I mean, I agree. I don't know that Buffalo has enough, but then again, I don't know that Seattle is going to bring even their B-plus game. So, I mean, Russell Wilson still can't run a whole lot. He's now a pocket passer, and that's not really his game. And, you know, this game could easily be 10-9, and very much so. It could be, you know, it could be less than that. We could be another 6-6 tie.
Right, right.
But that brings us to our last game, which should be a fun one. It could impact a little bit of things down the road, but it is the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Baltimore Ravens. Reggie, who do you have?
Because Big Ben's not there, well, they're saying he might play, huh?
Tomlin was kind of hinting towards there's a chance he'll at least be active, which means there's a good chance Ben would play if he's active.
Well, I guess I can't do it if then. Wow, just because he's going to be active, I got to go Pittsburgh. I mean,
okay.
if he were inactive and there's no chance he plays, then I go Baltimore. But, no, just because there's a chance he plays, which if there's a chance he will, then I've got to go Pittsburgh.
Oh, him and Jason Witten are the iron horses. If you see them anywhere near the facility, they're playing.
Right.
Coach, who do you have?
You know, again, this is one of those tough games with me, and I might go opposite of you guys with the Ravens on this. I don't think Ben is healthy enough. I think they will dress him just as a point of a level of comfort for the quarterback that will start. But I don't know if he's going to play. If he does, he's very limited in what he can do. It's just because the mobility won't be there for him, so I'm going to have to go with the Ravens on this one.
Yeah, that's it's kind of my reasoning on it. And, you know, Reggie, feel free to swap over with us if you want. But that's my whole thing is I do agree that if Ben is active or anywhere near the Ravens facility, stadium that there's a good chance he'll play. If when Big Ben can't scramble a little bit, it takes away from his game. The same thing with Russell Wilson. They can't be who they are. So for some goofy reason, I trust Joe Flacco to somehow win this game or at least not lose it so that their kicker can win it. I'm going to take Baltimore.
Yeah, I get you guys. I'm going to stick it out with Pittsburgh, though.
Okay. I was going to give you the option because I was torn because of the same information I just gave you. So I was going to give you the option just in case. But to recap,
I was going to say, maybe give y'all the option to catch up.
Maybe so. I think you would have to sit out a couple of weeks for me to get close.
Yeah. Well, you know me, Reg. I always pull that rabbit out in the last minute. So I just hadn't been able to focus a little bit lately. But it's coming back around by next week. Trust me.
You've been busy looking for running backs, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, we have a lot there to work on in that area. But I think that the team is going to be fine within the next 2 weeks. I think we'll get eight players back, so we'll be fine. And that's what I want to add on as the new coined phrase for our franchise quarterback. And basically he says, R-E-L-A-X, relax. So if he's relaxed and we play that well against Atlanta with that big of a difference in our starting lineup and the impact players that we have, then I have to trust what he says, because I was very comfortable. And even though no one wants to lose, I was very pleased with how we lost, with the opportunity there at the end for us to still try to make something happen. So, relax.
So, how do you spell that word again, Coach?
R-E-L-A-X. That's how he put it.
I just wanted to make sure I had a clean-cut version that I didn't try to laugh through the backside of or something like that, or because that's probably going to be a soundbite starting next week. So, I've figured out how to do this now. Our sound guy has kind of fallen asleep on us, so I have figured out how to engineer soundtracks. So expect that to be a good one next week. But to recap, we all have Atlanta over Tampa Bay. We all have Oakland over Denver. Coach has Seattle. Me and Reggie have Buffalo. And Reggie has Pittsburgh. And myself and Coach have Baltimore. Those should be some fun ones. We're going to try to run through as many of these other things as we can here. We're going to start with Jacksonville. I don't know if they fired the wrong one, but they didn't fire the one that I thought they should have. They fired their offense coordinator, Greg Olsen, who becomes the third or fourth offense coordinator to get fired this year. For some reason, even though the team looks like they quit on him, Gus Bradley is still in the building. What do you guys think?
I don't think that's their problem. I think they're just a young football team who needs a lot of things to happen for them. So I don't feel that that's the problem. I think they're just a team that needs a lot of revamping right now, and they're still very young. So I mean, where are you going to find at this particular point? I don't think that was the issue for them as much as some other things, but that's just my opinion.
And Reggie had to drop off to take care of some things, so he will rejoin us again next week. But, it's just one of those. Jacksonville should have took a step forward, and somehow they went backwards. So they kind of did what Buffalo and a couple other teams did. You let somebody fall on the sword, and you hope it revitalizes everybody else.
Yeah, we'll see if that was the right move here in the next 2 weeks.
Exactly. The Arizona Cardinals continue to go on a little bit of a skid, and it didn't help that they put offensive lineman Jared Veldheer on the IR. He is a fantastic offensive lineman. So if Carson Palmer thought getting sacked 8 times is bad, just wait till Jared's not playing. It could be a lot more. And also, Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, is going to be out for 3 to 6 weeks with a knee injury. Do you think Arizona can still kind of put some things together, or do you think they might as well almost start playing for next year?
I don't know. It just depends on how well and how fast these players can come back. And if, again, as we face the same situation in Green Bay, can they do enough to keep themselves competitive until they can get a lot of the intricate pieces back? So that's where it's going to be based on injury, and it's going to also be based on the depth of their roster. What players and what personnel and those combinations of that personnel will now come up, perform, step up, and help win football games. So I think, again, there's a 2-week window there with Arizona that we have to wait and kind of let it fill itself out and see where they are as a competitive team.
Yeah, I'll give it that. We'll give it a few more weeks to see what they can do. I just feel bad for Larry Fitzgerald, who doesn't look like he's going to get another shot to play for a championship. But that's the way it goes sometimes. what was it, Dan Marino in his second year went to a Super Bowl and never made it back to another one. So, I mean, sometimes things happen that way.
This is true.
The Browns are going to part ways with Josh Gordon after he gets out of rehab. They tried to trade him. They tried to do a handful of other things, and there were no real takers. But then again, with him kind of in rehab, it's kind of hard to move him anyway. It may be against the CBA even. But they tried to trade him. They're finally going to cut their losses. I felt they should have done this last year and let him get his stuff together and then come back in the league. But, you know, at this point, he realized he had a problem, and he's trying to do something about it. So good luck to him.
Likewise, I agree. I think that, you know, he's made the right move for his life, not just his football career.
Exactly, exactly, because it's about more than the game, and I'm glad he was able to figure that out. The London game this past weekend ended in a 27-27 tie, but the biggest story to me is that they actually sent two good teams in the Washington Redskins and Cincinnati Bengals over to England. They finally sent two decent quality teams, and this may be the best game played in London to this date.
Yeah, I agree. The fact that it was played to a tie proves that both organizations went in, played hard, and proved that what they had was a success. Unfortunately, no one walked away with what they call a definitive win. So great job by Coach Marv Lewis as well as Coach Jay Gruden and putting together an opportunity for the fans of London to be able to absorb the American style of football. And as we go and play more and more of those games there, we'll start to see a lot of that competition step up, because it's going to be one of those games where you really want to kind of show yourself approved.
Absolutely. Actually, wasn't Jay Gruden the offensive coordinator under Marvin Lewis a couple years ago?
This would be correct. He was the offensive coordinator prior to becoming the head coach in Washington.
Well, that's definitely a cool thing. I'm always a Gruden family fan anyway, but Lewis has done some really good things up there. I hope maybe they can finally get over that hump and win a playoff game, because Cincinnati is a pretty good organization.
And they're one of those teams I say that will be part of that nine that I have on my radar as teams to be in postseason play.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. Speaking of London, next season the Dolphins and Saints are going to play each other in London, and this will be the third time the Dolphins will be playing there. They have played 2014 and 2015, and the second time that the Saints will have played in London, they played last in 2008. Mostly, this is because the Dolphins are getting a Super Bowl in Miami because of the revamped field and stadium down in Miami, and as part of the deal, if they revamped it and re-upped some of the stuff, they got a Super Bowl, and also part of the agreement, they play in London.
Well, that's great for them, and it's starting to also show that you have a predetermined hype that will come around the Super Bowl and give that city the opportunity to kind of market itself as well as an extension to that fan base that you already have stateside.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll go to that one next. Cam Newton said, to paraphrase, that he doesn't feel safe and he wants to meet with Roger Goodell, to which Roger Goodell is actually going to meet with Cam Newton. I believe they're going to do it possibly tomorrow or Wednesday. About Cam does take a lot of hits, but like we said off the show many times, it's because of the style of play. And the way he plays a lot more like Big Ben and the Russell Wilsons. And when you get outside the pocket, you're kind of fair game. So you're going to take hits. It's just Cam seems to be the outspoken person about these types of hits.
Well, that's why you have the competition committee, and that's why the rules are designed that way, to help protect those players at specific positions and what they're facing. So one of the things that he has to understand, and again, I don't disagree with Cam, that you know he's taken a tremendous amount of hits. And there have been some plays in there that were questionable, and then some that were just 100% legitimate calls that were missed. However, you know, staying within the tackle box helps makes it easier for the referee and the other officiating crew to clearly see what is taking place. So I hope that his meeting with Commissioner Goodell goes well, and that there's some resolve to what they see in his situation on the field with these late hits.
And I like that Goodell immediately, upon hearing about this, he said absolutely. He wanted to sit down and talk to him and hear his concerns. And this just shows you that Goodell is one of the better guys you can have in that position. It's not easy being commissioner. It's like being the president. You're going to take, you get a lot of the credit when things go right, but it's all your fault when it goes wrong. So it's good that Goodell's going to at least listen to him and hear his concerns. But, I feel like Goodell can say, well, I can suggest to the referees that, hey, we need to look more at these type of plays about maybe, trying to keep these kinds of things from happening. But he can't make a referee throw a flag.
Yeah, that's true. But again, all of these plays, every play that is officiated and called in every game is reviewed. So all of the games are reviewed and all of the officials get graded. So again, those calls are missed. They clearly have the evidence on how to go back and look at how they grade the official and most definitely look at how they're going to get it corrected, just not just with Cam Newton, but with any other players within the league.
Yeah, that's true. Richard Sherman is complaining about the officiating during the recent game with the New Orleans Saints. Like I told you earlier, tell me the last, that's not like that hasn't happened before, but it's funny to me that Richard Sherman's the one complaining that they're actually calling the pass interference and the other things on the Seahawks, because the Seahawks a couple years ago said, we're going to continue to play hard, we're going to continue to hold people and do all this other stuff and dare you to call it every play. So now they're actually calling it, and Sherman's mad about it.
Well, again, half of one, six of one and a half dozen of the other, tomato, tomato,
right.
You pick it. So, again, we're talking about officiating, and again, that if that is the case, and some calls have been made or missed, or misrepresented, then that's why you have what you have in place now, and they will look at that as well.
Absolutely. And speaking of Seahawks and penalties, Seahawk player Earl Thomas got a penalty because he scooped up a fumble, ran it back about 32 yards for the touchdown, and got caught up in the moment, which I totally believe from Earl, I really do. Got caught up in the moment and hugged the referee as part of the celebration, which ended up getting him the personal foul called on him. And you just can't touch a referee. And these guys know that, and I know he got caught up in it, but you just got to know better than to touch an official.
Yeah, he just got caught up in the moment. I don't think his teammates or any official was offended by it. It was just he was excited, and he knows now he has to find another way to channel that excitement other than hugging an official. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, he should be glad that he didn't get ejected, because typically if you bump into a referee or anything of that sort, even in a passing gesture, then you're typically thrown out. So he actually got pretty lucky.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the official realized that it wasn't something that was done with malice on an ill intent.
Right. No, I don't think any of the Seahawks would do anything like that. So it's good to know that as hard as they play, that they're really good guys. Just, they're going to dare you to call it on them. And that brings us to, I said earlier that I know Reggie was there, and myself and my mom actually went to that game. And when we got home, we were treated to the amazing display that went to overtime between Philadelphia and Dallas. Ultimately, Dallas picking up the big win. First, I want to talk about Carson Wentz, because you actually said pre-draft that you like him better than Goff and that he was probably one of the better quarterbacks. He's actually developed into a pretty nice-looking quarterback, and I think he's going to be a part of this new generation going forward.
Yeah, I chose Wentz. I thought Wentz was the better quarterback. He graded out for me a lot higher than Goff. Not much more, but one of the things I liked about him was his size, his speed, his ability to make the throws, and I think the level of maturity. He's proven that he stepped right into an offense, and he's a very smart quarterback. So he's been able to absorb this offense very well, and I think he's only going to get better once they can shore up the offensive line and give him a few more weapons. They're in that developmental stage right now, and again, I look at them as I looked at Carr 2 years ago when I predicted him in this same situation with Oakland. So be aware that Philadelphia will be that team within the next 2 years, and Wentz will be one of those quarterbacks, provided he can stay healthy, will be one of those quarterbacks that will make a statement.
Absolutely. I think this upcoming generation of young quarterbacks that we're going to see kind of take us through the next era, I think you're looking at Dak Prescott, you're looking at Carson Wentz, you're looking at Marcus Mariota, Russell Wilson that I just mentioned. I think those are going to be the guy, the Derek Carrs, those are going to be the guys that we're going to be talking about for the next 10 years at least.
Yeah, I agree.
But speaking of Dak, he had he didn't play a very good first half, and he'll be the first to tell you that. But he was able to stop making the mistakes he did in the first half, played a solid second half, and then ultimately led the winning drive in overtime over the Philadelphia Eagles. What can you say about Dak's play so far this year?
I think he's doing very, very well. He's doing what I thought he would do when the opportunity presented itself. The question now is what's going to happen with him. He has to have a level of maturity now that he has Dez White back and how that relationship is going to work. But overall, I think he's doing it. He's one of those guys with an opportunity, and I don't mean that in a negative way. He's prepared. He comes out as a professional, and he's proven why he should be there and why he's starting now.
Absolutely, and I think I won't say the sky's the limit, even though it technically is, but I feel like Dak Prescott is definitely going to be a good guy going forward. He's a good, positive role model, and I think he's the perfect fit for the Cowboys right now.
Absolutely.
The Patriots trade linebacker Jamie Collins to the Cleveland Browns for a compensatory third-round pick. This is actually the third-round pick that they traded, I think, to Cleveland just a couple weeks ago in a trade they made with them. But they basically get their third-round pick back. And the funny thing about this is Jamie Collins is in his last season of his contract. He's due big money, and supposedly he wanted big-time Von Miller money. Now, this is all speculation. I'm not going to say that I represent the Patriots in this, but it seems to be that maybe he didn't want to come off of making that big money, and so they sent him to Cleveland. They sent him packing to the first people that wanted him.
Well, as I said before, one of the things the Patriots are known for doing is that they have a internal cap for players. And, again, if you come in and feeling that you're bigger than the team, then they have no problem giving you an opportunity to see if you're just that type of player in the market. So, again, the Patriots do what the Patriots do. They have no problem with letting you go shop the market, but just understand that when you make that move, that's what you're going to have.
Absolutely. And as we get into the last two things here of Falcon Zone, they're pretty. You know, we appreciate everybody tuning in and all the amazing people we've met and all that. I just want to say not only was it a great win by Derek Carr and the Raiders, but they did this despite a league record 23 penalties. Now, Coach, have you ever been a part of a team, like coaching a team or something, that committed a ton of penalties like that?
I have been a part of teams that committed those type of penalties, but unfortunately we were not on the winning end of those consequences. So I think, again, it spoke volumes to Carr and what he's able to do. He's becoming the quarterback and developing into the quarterback that I thought he would become there with that organization. And Reggie McKenzie, the GM, is doing a great job, a phenomenal job of making sure that he gets the right type of players and personnel into the organization. So, again, for them to be able to pull it off says a lot about how mature he's becoming, being that person, being Carr, and how well he's developing as a quarterback himself.
Absolutely. And since we're speaking of Derek Carr, the last thing we were going to kind of get into, we'll do it real quickly because it's still midseason, so many things can happen. But the midseason MVP race, I listed out a couple guys here. You actually had a few more you wanted to add. And I had Matt Ryan, Derek Carr, Ezekiel Elliott, and Tom Brady. And you also wanted to add Dak Prescott, correct?
That would be correct.
And of those, who do you think is the front runner right now?
As I said earlier, I like Carr for what he's doing and what he's his ability to continue to do. So I would like to see Carr. I mean, Brady is a shoe-in. Elliott is one of those guys where at the running back position, he's doing very well. But he has offensive line that's helping him with that. But I'm looking at a team that's still developing, and that's what I like more so. Again, Matt Ryan has his numbers. I've had his numbers for years. I'm looking at a quarterback that's emerging with not quite as many weapons as some of the other teams have right now currently. That's why I stick with Carson.
Yeah, I would. Right now, I favor Matt Ryan. Obviously, I agree with you on Carr. So does Colin Cowherd. So we're in great company with that. It's good that he likes our pick. I agree with you on Elliott. And the weird thing is, as much as I'm a Brady homer, as much as I'm a Patriots fan, objectively, I look and say he's going to play four less games, even though his numbers are going to be right at everybody else's. I think the four games should actually count against him, and it should go to Ryan or Carr.
Yeah, we're going to see what comes of it. So I think it'll come down to probably those two guys. And, you know, again, I tip my hat to all of those players, but I just favor Carr right now just based on those things that I said.
Absolutely. Maybe we can reach out to the Raiders organization out there, see if we can get one of them on to talk about the development of Derek Carr. But that's going to actually do it for us this week. Thanks, as always, Coach, for being a part of the show. We always enjoy having you on, and I really enjoy the three-headed attack the most. Shout-out to Reggie for joining us, and we'll see you guys next week. Go Falcons!
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.